Hello, everyone. Shavuot Tov. Beginnings of a beautiful, what we hope will be a beautiful week in Israel and around the globe. You are listening to Rejuvenation with Eve Harrow on the Land of Israel Network, with many thanks to Ben Bresky and Tabitha Epstein and the rest of the crew at the Land of Israel Network to put us all out on the air. Today is July 31st, 2016, the 25th day of Tammuz, 5776. We are deep into that three-week period in the Jewish calendar between the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av, where usually lots of miserable things happen to the Jewish people. Traditionally, we don't have weddings during the three-week period. It's considered still, after 2,000 years, a mourning period for the destruction, not only of the temple, but of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. So some of which we have back. We are back again in the land of Israel. Temple, still something that we dream about. And along those lines and the whole theme of these 3 weeks, I have on the phone with me now, Lorenz Baziz, the projects coordinator for the Katif Heritage Center. Good morning, Lorenz. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, good morning. Shavuot Tov.
So 11 years ago, I was in Gush Katif. I had moved down there just for the summer, hoping for a miracle. Didn't really turn out that way. And I was witness to the destruction of 25 communities, which I had visited, where I had friends, including you, for many years, and the agriculture and just the beautiful, beautiful settlement of the Gaza Strip in the area called Gush Katif. And 11 years ago, for those who don't know, the Israeli government, in a unilateral move, came and destroyed the communities and uprooted close to 10,000 people out of their homes, including you. So where are we now, 11 years later? Where are you? Where is everybody else? Give us a little bit of an update on what's happened to the former Gush Katifers.
Okay, all right. So we have also to mention, if we're talking about the events that happened in 2005, we have to mention also the four communities that were also uprooted in North Shomron. So we are talking about 25 communities altogether, but four of them were in North Shomron.
Right, exactly.
I had the privilege of living in Gush Katif for 19 years. We were farmers in Gush Katif. And since 2005, we have spent for ourselves 8 years in the Karavila site of Nitzan, which is between Ashkelon and Ashdod. 3 years ago, we rebuilt a house also in the area, and we've been living there with the rest of the community, the majority of our community of Gadid. And for the rest of the families, they're all scattered really after a long period of time in temporary settings, in care villas, in temporary places. Little by little, the families, maybe too slowly, but little by little, the families start building and entering their new homes in new communities. And this is throughout Israel.
Mm-hmm. So more than a decade later, how many would you say have finally gotten a new home and aren't still living in essentially refugee camps?
Uh-huh. Oh, we are talking about there were 1,800 families that were expelled from Gush Katif and another about 200 families from North Shomron. And so we are now talking about some 75% of the families that are in their permanent house. This doesn't mean that they all have rebuilt all of their lives, but, you know, still they have a roof over their heads. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the families are just struggling a lot because they're maybe the weaker families. They're the families that is harder for them to just turn the page and start a new life. They're the families that didn't go back to farming. They didn't find employment. So we have still families here in the Nitzan Karavila site. We have still another 150 families that have to find for them a solution that are in the middle of building or planning a home. But still, there are a lot of obstacles for these families until they reach the house.
Were people compensated properly, if you can say that? I know that when a farmer has to give up his farm that he's worked on very hard, and he's in his mid-50s, and he isn't given any land to properly replace what he left, and some of the compensation money that was given for the homes ended up being used to buy food and to pay rent for all those years. Is that another reason that people are struggling? They simply have nothing?
You know, people who started Gush Katif 45 years ago when they were 20, 25, now they are older. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, they were 50, 55. It's very hard. Even if you want to start something else, no one will really take you and employ you at the age of 50, 55. And the compensations were not enough compensation. Mm-hmm. Were given compensation, but they were given like in a very low percentage, you know.
The basics, yeah.
Yeah, it's the basics. And then, you know, if we had compensation, let's say, for the house, but we didn't have the option to build a house because we didn't have the infrastructures, we didn't have the lottery in order to have our plot. So the money stays, and then a couple of years after, it's, you know, like you cannot really use it. It's money, but you cannot really build what you had in Gush Katif. So yes, we were given compensation. We were given also for the number of years that we were in Gush Katif, but in no means it was enough. And then a couple of times the government decided on having additional compensation because they realized it was almost impossible for a family to get back on their feet with what they had given according to the law to the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is the current government helping at all? I know there's been many statements about just finally finishing and getting everybody back on their feet and ending this miserable chapter in modern Israeli history. Do you find that?
Yeah, there are efforts. It's not proper. It's not really because the government so much really wants, because we're putting a lot. Yeah, there is a lobby in the Knesset. There are people at the Gush Katif committee that are, you know, working in order to, you know, have new laws and in order to, you know, have the government helping all of these families who have to find a house to rebuild a house. The government is not like really eager, you know, when everyone wakes up in the morning, wow, let's help the people of Gush Katif. It has taken a lot of efforts, a lot of leverage and a lot of Knesset members in order to have like, you know, a really little bit. Things are getting, you know, a little bit better, but I can't say that there is a major effort, of, you know, like doing something.
So in addition to where people are physically, where are people emotionally? I know that there were many who said, the young people especially, who said they weren't going to go into the army because here it was their own Israeli army and the, you know, the institution that we so admire and hold up for an example and raise our children to go into to protect the Jewish people. Yet it was Israeli soldiers and such a cynical manipulation, I think, of the army that was sent by the Ariel Sharon government to take you out of your homes. And at the time, there were some of the young people who said, that's it. This is not my army. I'm not going to wear this uniform. I can't possibly go into the army. What ended up happening in the interim? Do you have the young people going in still and still serving the country?
It's like the mourning of a close member. Like at the first place, you know, you're very angry and upset and hurt, and you have a lot of sorrow. And little by little, it fades out a little bit. And I think that what happened to the youth of Gush Katif, that they were, it's like, you know, all teenagers, it's either black or white. There is no like gray area in between. And really right at the aftermath of the uprooting from Gush Katif, they were very angry. And this is, you know, what they said. And actually also a lot of young people, specifically in that year, didn't enroll into the army, which they did a year after or 2 years after. This is actually what happened to my son. And he went to a mechina and he took time.
To a pre-army academy, a preparation academy.
So it took a little bit of time, but eventually they enroll into the army. There is a very small percentage that really didn't go at all in the army. And now we see that, you know, little by little, the kids are going back to elite units in the army. They're like trying to do their best. I think that part of it is like the education that, you know, the kids have got in Gush Katif and, you know, in a lot of places in Israel, that, you know, you have to give the best of yourself. This is something, you know, that penetrates and it's inside of them. And they find this as something important to do for the country. And there is, I think that they're also trying to make a very big difference between what is the government and the state of Israel. The state of Israel is important. We have to preserve it, preserve the state of Israel, the army as an entity. And this is what prevails eventually. There is still a lot of, you know, hurt feelings, bad feelings. And I don't know what should happen if it should happen again. I mean, how the kids would, specifically the kids from Gush Katif, the youth from Gush Katif will respond to maybe something, you know, else that could happen, that would happen, God forbid.
Mm-hmm.
But still they have like the spirits, and they want to, you know, to give to this country, because we know that the only country that we have, I mean, this is the state of Israel, which the Jewish people just dreamt of it for thousands of years. So we have it now, so we should preserve it as much as we can.
I think this really point, what you just said so beautifully, points to the strength of the education and the communities in which these children were raised in Gush Katif, that the Zionism and the yearning to give to the Jewish people, even when our leadership is not deserving, all right, when the people are greater than the leadership, which is, I know for myself, that's a distinction that I have had to make in my years in Israel, that sometimes the elected leadership is not doing what they should be doing, but we have to push through anyhow because it's the only country we have. And it's an absolute miracle that we're here at all. And so even though sometimes there are tremendous failings and step backwards, and sometimes even falling off a cliff, in what happens here in this country, this is, we need to all, you know, still do what we can to make it better. It's tempting to check out. I really, in other circumstances, I was actually surprised, I have to tell you, that people in Gush Katif didn't leave the country. The level of betrayal that I felt, and I wasn't even thrown out of my home, the level of betrayal that I felt of the government against people whom it had sent. Nobody was just like, you know, squatting in Gush Katif. Everybody had been sent by the government. Everybody had been encouraged to plant cherry tomatoes in the sand and geraniums in the biggest hothouse in the Middle East, and the markets had opened up in Europe for the peppers, and all of that with the encouragement of the Israeli government. And then literally overnight, in a unilateral move to say, that's it, we're taking you out. And you know, and then to have not peace or not any kind of coexistence come out of that, but to have a terror state arise literally on the sand dunes that you had made so beautiful, is now a terror state in every possible meaning, that, you know, when it feels like it starts a war, digs tunnels, shoots rockets at people living in the southern part of Israel or Tel Aviv. So, you know, but with all that, I'm astonished at how loyal the people from Gush Katif are to this country. And I think it really says a lot about the community and about those of you who raised these kids. Obviously not for this. No one in our wildest nightmares thought this would happen.
That's really not why we told them. Yeah.
Never.
This is also not the reason I came to Israel on Aliyah and, you know, I had other hopes for my government and for, you know, what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, kids also think maybe also pragmatically that, you know, if you're not in a place, you cannot be influential. So if you're not in the army and getting to high positions in the army, then maybe you cannot be influential and maybe try to do something else than what the army active or in other places like Amona, and you know, like we're facing also a new challenge with Amona now.
Right.
This is, you know, the place where you have to be influential. You cannot be like you were in Europe or in other places there where you don't have any influence.
Just lay low. Yes. Right. Right. Well, they called it the disengagement. It was really an expulsion. But what I've seen is that the people from Gush Katif have gotten more engaged with the country, not less, in order to prevent something like this from ever happening again. And unbelievably, it's still spoken about, you know, leaving Judea and Samaria. Really, do we need more bitter of an example of what happens anytime we leave an area? So, well, I just have to say kudos to those of you who really raised that generation in Gush Katif, because I think we're seeing the overall love for the Jewish people, for the land of Israel, and for the institutions.
Yeah, you know, a lot with our new, I mean, the... Not only the people of Gush Katif are going to the army, there are people, like, amazing people. We saw that in all, you know, like, the hardships that this country was facing during the last years, and so much strength in people, in wanting to stay here and to stick to this land and to be faithful to the state of Israel. I mean, it's really amazing.
Yeah, it's a privilege to be among people. Absolutely. Now, you're the projects coordinator for the Katif Heritage Center. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Okay. So we have a Katif Center. We have a visitor center, which is located in Nitzan between Ashkelon and Ashdod. It's a center where you can hear and learn about Gush Katif, what was in Gush Katif, how Gush Katif was established. It's through films. We have also guides who are actual residents of Gush Katif for guiding the entire tour. It's a tour of an hour and 15 minutes, also in English or in Hebrew, in French. Actually, through the story of Gush Katif, we also point out several values that we believe that are important, the love for the land of Israel, the help one to each other, the way also we tell about the way people of Gush Katif have chosen to lead the struggle to keep Gush Katif in a very non-violent way. We wanted to just, you know, point out the values that we believed in, the importance of the state of Israel in our eyes. And the importance of the army, even, you know, through what they have done. And then we talk about, you know, what happened actually during the expulsion from Gush Katif. But also we tell about what happens now, the rebuilding of the new communities throughout Israel, in the north, at the Egyptian border, in the Cholot Chalutza, in the Lachish area. And it's like a whole tour. It's a very powerful tour. And so we have a lot of groups coming from the States, from Europe also. Students, schools are coming and trying to really realize what was Gush Katif and maybe learn a lesson from what they see when they take the tour. Aside from that, we have a lot of activities that we have in schools. We have now camp starting, a 3 days camp for boys and girls who would, you know, try to catch the spirit of Gush Katif and continue the spirit of Gush Katif wherever they are right now. And for us, it's important to keep this story for the next generation.
Well, I can testify, having been to the center quite a few times and try and take people there as much as I can, how important it is to go. It's a place that will make you sad for what was lost. And the feeling that I always have at the end of the film is, okay, I want to go live next door to someone from Gush Katif, because you succeeded in striking the balance between people for whom something terrible did happen, yet you're not victims in the sense of, oh, feel sorry for us. You're strong enough to, you know, be restarting and to still have hope. And it's a very interesting, a very fine balance, But I know that so many of us feel that really what you talk about, the spirit of Gush Katif, it was like a diamond that was shattered. And now the little sprinkles, the little shards are all over the country instead of concentrated in one place. And there are very few people who aren't living near the people from Gush Katif, because of course the new communities that you started are not only for people who used to live in Gush Katif. Anybody is welcome to join. So I know, for example, some of my children's friends, young couples who have come and they've moved to Katif and they've moved to Cholot Chalutza and they've moved to the places where Gush Katif people are, because there is this tremendous strength that you have also that people want to be a part of. And I think that's tremendously to your credit. On August 8th, you also have a day of like a little conference day. What is that all about?
Yes, we like every year we are having a commemoration for the communities that have been destroyed. And last year it was 10 years of Gush Katif. We had also a lot of media got involved into it. And we it was proper to just remember Gush Katif and talk about Gush Katif. And we had like a lot of support from the media. When we started realizing that, okay, 11th year, maybe people are not so much interested in Gush Katif anymore. And how can we address the public in order for this to be still relevant, the story of Gush Katif being relevant? So we had the feeling that we have to talk about something greater than Gush Katif. And we decided to have a day, a Kenes, a convention, if we can say. It's here in Nitzan. We to have a convention on something that would be more national responsibility. How in every place, in everyone that we meet, in every a job that we have, in every group that we have, we can be responsible for the nation, for the state of Israel. It happens in the media, in the government, in security, in culture. And so we are trying to, have a lot of people, not only political faces, figures, and Knesset members, but also influential people in the media, influential people in culture, and trying to have a little bit of a debate and to have both sides, but to know that we can have both sides in Israel, but still not lead to war between brothers or not lead to violence, just like we had last year in the parade, in the great gay parade. There are a lot of issues in the Israeli society that can lead to violence, and we saw that. Mm-hmm. But to be able to show both sides of one issue and being able to talk about it out of the belief that we have to be responsible for our nation, responsible for the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm. So to have a civil society in the sense of being able to behave civilly with each other and talk about very painful issues where there are very passionate opinions on all sides, yet not lead to a place where we have, God forbid, a war between brothers or a civil war. That's what happened 2,000 years ago that led to the Romans coming in and destroying the temple. So that, I think, is a lesson that we have learned that is very deep, that we have to be very, very careful with everything that we have. And I don't think people realize we're living in a country where we have absorbed Jews from 120 different countries with a lot of different ways of looking at the world and different cultures and different ideas. And in order to build it, as you said, loyal to our country and loyal to each other, we have to also learn to have the discourse and have the debate, but have it in a way that's fruitful and respectful and move on from there. So if anyone is around, will there be simultaneous translation by any chance, or it's just going to be in Hebrew on August 8th?
It's going to be in Hebrew. I hope that, we're all now in a temporary setting. Although by power of law, we have to build a permanent center, and we will eventually build it here in Nitzan and have facilities that will, enable us to have bigger conventions and more groups coming into the Katif Center. Still, we're in a very temporary setting. So I think not everything is really perfect the way we want it to be. But it's a good thing that you're mentioning. Maybe we'll think about it for, you know, next year's year to come.
To have it, if you have to have it simultaneously translated, or to even put up, you know, stream it or something, so that people who aren't in Israel or don't speak Hebrew can also hear some of the topics that you mentioned that are even universal, not just relating to Israel or to Gush Katif.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what we mean to be, we want it to be a convention that will take place every year on the same topic. Of course, different issues every year. But we want it to be like, something that will go on and until maybe we go back to Gush Katif, but then we'll have maybe another topic.
So I wanted to ask you about that. So I live in Gush Etzion. I live in the Etzion block where in 1948, there were four Jewish communities that were destroyed by the Jordanians during Israel's War of Independence. And for 19 years, people dreamed about going home to Gush Etzion. And then in 1967, it actually happened. And in the Six-Day War, which nobody can still explain how that happened and how we won that war, we were able to liberate once again Yehuda v'Shomron, Judea and Samaria, and of course, the eastern part of Jerusalem. And people were able to come back and live in the Etzion block in Gush Etzion, south of Jerusalem. And I later on, of course, joined them. And it's been really the journey of my life. And one of the things that we're seeing now, I've seen it in the newspapers and from talking to people, is people who were expelled from Gush Katif 11 years ago saying, we're ready to go home. And I spoke to Anita Tucker, who, of course, from Gush Katif, she was one of the first people to settle there. She used to grow meter-long celery in the sand in her home in Netzer Chazani. And I spoke to her after the war in Gaza 2 years ago. And she said, you know, that people were hoping that we would finally finish with Hamas and get rid of this terrible entity that now controls Gaza, and the Jews would be able to go home. How seriously is that felt, Lorenz, among the people from Gush Katif? Is it just kind of like a thing, or there are really people who say that we want to keep this dream alive because who knows what will be, and maybe one day we will have the opportunity to go back?
I think, first of all, we were not at the initiative of this movement. Who was at the initiative is the Gush Katif Committee, which is, it's called in Hebrew Vaad Mityashvei Gush Katif. It's an organization that was established right after, at the aftermath of the expulsion from Gush Katif, in order to help the people, you know, and the communities and, they were the one pushing the government and having a lobby in the government and trying really to help the communities and the families. And now, 11 years after, they say, okay, we've helped a lot of families. We have helped a lot of communities. Now we think that we have to get in the minds of the people, of our leaders, but also little by little as a grassroots movement, to get back to the idea that Am Yisrael should be in Gush Katif, as in all parts of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really, I've heard about it. I've spoken to the people who were at the initiative of it. I myself, not really involved at the moment about it. And I think there are a lot of young people, a lot of young, very idealistic people that can relate to the idea. I think at the moment it's not really very operational because still the Hamas is in the Gaza Strip. It's important that the movement like this starts. You know, we start hearing about movement like this because as you've said, there were experiences, there were part chapters in the history of Israel where we saw actually that. With a few people that believed in an idea, it actually, you know, led more people to get there. And we saw that just as you said with Gush Etzion. So I think it's important that it takes place. I'm for myself not here, not there right now. I know that there are a lot of people who have had a lot of struggle in order to get to a new house and to a new life. And for them, it's not really an option. But little by little, the movement is catching, you know, a lot of young people were raised in Gush Katif and think about it seriously. But I think it will be when we see that it's possible. Like it's not something like from a few people that can be able to do that. We have to have a lot more wider support in the government, maybe in the world also. I'm sorry that I'm not seeing this happen, but on the other hand, I think it's important that there are groups like this that, you know, talk about it and try to get this into the minds of the people.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that there should be any place in the land of Israel that should be Judenrein, that everybody should be okay with it being free of Jews, that no Jews can live there, that it's okay to ethnically cleanse an area of Jews and then have the chutzpah, if you will, the unmitigated gall to talk about coexistence in the next breath. So there should be, you know, for those of us who really would like to live in peace, and there are many, many, many of us, that includes also Jews being able to live in their homes and not being expelled for any reason whatsoever. So it's an interesting thing to see. I think to be an Israeli and to be a Jew, at some point you need to be unrealistic in the sense that miracles have happened to us at the times where we least expected it.
Yeah.
And just, right? The fact that we're here at all.
I mean, I call it crazy land sometimes. You know, like when I really, it's really crazy land. And we've seen not only politically or in dreams like this about the land of Israel, but everything is like in technology, in everything. We had the chutzpah to just, you know, try new things, and we see it in almost every place. So yes, we have to continue dreaming and even trying to do things to accomplish our dreams.
Yeah. And then strange things happen. You know, like we come to a land, we come en masse to a land, back to a land with no natural resources except what's in our heads, and that we can think and be creative. And lo and behold, the world enters an era where that's what you need in order to change the world. You don't need a diamond mine or a gold mine or an oil field anymore. You need your brains because everything is high tech and biotechnology. And here we are right there leading the world again. So we keep doing what we're doing. Obviously, Hashem keeps doing what he's doing. And in general, just to have the faith and to take the difficult times and try and, you know, put them in some kind of perspective. And I think the people from Gush Katif, yourself included, are an incredible example to all of us about seeing a bigger picture, seeing the long term. And while having borne ridiculous pain and suffering, made, I think, all the more worse because it was done at the hands of our own people instead of the enemy, which I think is just, on top of everything else, just really a betrayal that it is very hard to understand. But you've shown for many of us that, you know, nothing's going to keep us down. And for that, we all owe you a debt of gratitude. And to make sure that everybody from Gush Katif has a roof over their heads and dignity and is able to continue to create, because that's really all that you wanted to do, is get back to your farms and continue to grow and continue to create and not live off of handouts. And so I think it behooves this government and everybody as individuals also to make sure that that happens. And if any of you have not been, any of you who are listening have not been to the Katif Heritage Center, go so that you understand, and especially take your children. If you have a 16 or 17 year old or younger, they don't remember when Jews lived in Gush Katif, when it wasn't a place where missiles were built and horrible things were coming out of, both for the people living there and for the people around there. And it's an important chapter of our history. If we can still talk about and fast and think about what happened 2,000 years ago, I think we can also think about what happened a decade ago and work that into our national memory. Okay, Lawrence Baziz, thank you so much for joining me.
Yes, thank you for calling. I was happy to be with you, and really come and the Gush Katif Center. It's mkatif.org. So if someone wants to have more information, they can see us on our website.
Fantastic.
mkatif.org.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Shavuot Tov. Have a good day.
Shavuot Tov. All right, everybody. That was, if you came into the middle, that was Lorenz Baziz, project coordinator for the Katif Heritage Center. And it turns out, someone that I was in high school with in Los Angeles.
We met
in Gush Katif. It suddenly clicked that you had been in Los Angeles for a year or two. And we went to high school together many years ago. We're both grandmothers now, but it's wonderful. Okay, everyone. Thank you so much, Lorenz. All right, everybody who is still listening, just a little bit of wisdom from Israel here, something that I experienced this morning. The proper way to eat a mango here in Israel on the hot summer day is with a knife and over the sink. Just peel it and let it just ooze. And anybody who's in Israel knows exactly what I'm talking about. I can see you all smiling because one of the things that we have done in this country is develop new kinds of mangoes that are so sweet and so delicious and so juicy that really the only way to eat them is over the sink and to become a big sticky mess and just enjoy with every mouthful the blessings of the land of Israel and the ultimate Jewish mother that provides us with food, with the beautiful fruit, the little things. So let's, you know, with all the big, we got to zoom in and zoom out. We're always zooming in and zooming out. The bigger picture, mankind, humanity, God's place in the world, all that stuff. And then sometimes just the really special moments in the hot summer of enjoying the fruits of our labor and the fruits of our land. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Be safe. Have a wonderful week. Love people. Be close. And do what it is that you need to do. And I will be back next week. So take care, everybody. Bye for now. This is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Our new headquarters are being built in eastern Gush Etzion, near the Dead Sea. The hills and the valleys and the streams and the seas all connect. And that's what we do here, the Land of Israel Network. Be a part of the Cause Match campaign.
Help build the Land of Israel Network headquarters. The Cause Match campaign ends on July 31st. To donate, visit thelandofisrael.com and click on Donate in the upper right-hand side of the page. That's thelandofisrael.com, sharing the truth and beauty of Israel with the world.
Rabbi Isaac Nissenbaum, one of the founders of the religious Zionist Mizrahi movement, wrote, "The objective of Mizrahi is the total revival of our nation in all its aspects, to revive Judaism in our hearts and to revive our hearts for Judaism. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement."
Do you like picking strawberries or blueberries in the spring and summer? What about grapes? If you were to take an experience like picking grapes and move it to the heartland of Israel, this is when an experience becomes prophetic. Young and old, singles and families are all invited on this adventure of a lifetime. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to join us on the mountains of Israel, where prophecy meets reality. Go to hayuvel.com, that's H-A-Y-O-V-E-L.com, for more information.